Well, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion at courtesy of the WA7-529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. And my name's Brett, and I'm net control for today, Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with a particular emphasis on updates on the COVID-19 pandemic. All amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions during the emergency preparedness net. So, if you'd like, I don't know if you have any questions about, I don't have the doctor here tonight, but I want to go over some of the updates on numbers for the COVID infections in Oregon, and, we'll do our best to answer your questions here. When you check in, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. If you have a question, go ahead and let me know at the beginning. I'll highlight you and make sure I get back to you. Let's see if there's anybody on Echolink that would like to check in for the emergency preparedness net. Come now. Okay, well, I'm not hearing anybody on Echolink, so let's just do general check-ins for the emergency preparedness net.
And Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Allen.
KJ 7, November, Fox Mike Berry, Malala.
Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor, Walton Woodburn.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem, and happy birthday to the U.S. Marine Corps. Today is their birthday.
Kilo Juliet 7, November Whiskey Kilo, Nick in Almsville. And it sounded like right when you were talking about going from Echolink to regular check-ins, like you doubled with maybe somebody from Echolink.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Let's pause there, then let's go back through the list. I think I talked over Jennifer a little bit there at the beginning, but let's go back through and see who we missed. So that was Nick. Kilo Juliet 7, November Whiskey Kilo. Thanks for checking in. Before that was Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta. Walt was in there, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. We had Barry, Kilo Juliet 7, November Foxtrot Mike. And then I think Jennifer checked in Alan, so that was Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, and Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. Was there anyone that I missed in that?
Kilo Juliet 7, Romeo Mike Uniform, Vance in McMinnville.
Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray, Crittenden in Salem.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Okay, another pause in the action there. That was Art, Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. Crittenden was in there. Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray. And then I think we have a new person there, if I got this right. Kilo Juliet 7, Romeo Mike Uniform Vance from McMinnville. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, well, welcome to the net. Looks like you might also have a Kilo Juliet 7. You might have gotten your ticket fairly recently. Is that true?
That's right, just a couple of weeks ago. So I've been getting interested in some of the emergency preparedness and Aries nets and just trying to drop in and kind of see what you guys are all about and participate if I can.
Okay, welcome. Yes, very good. That's a good thing to do. Now, this is a general sort of emergency preparedness net. We've kind of followed the whole COVID-19 thing over the course of the pandemic. In fact, we were calling it a pandemic before they officially mentioned that it was a pandemic. And you know, things are happening kind of as was predicted. We talked about this. Yeah, we talked about once a week. I only missed a week or so in there, but pretty much if you look at the trend lines from the different numbers of cases and things around the world, around the country, we're entering a new phase here. That's what I wanted to talk about tonight. That doesn't look good for us. However, there's some good news that was announced today, and I'll go over that a little bit. But we also talk about other emergency preparedness things, and you know, if you have other topics after we get through the COVID part. We'll address those as well. We talk a lot about just all different topics. So if you have one in particular that you want to kick around, let us know. And yeah, feel free to ask questions. It's no such thing as a dumb question. I think I usually mention that. If I don't know an answer to a COVID question, I will forward it over to Dr. Sund, and we'll get an answer from her, and I'll bring it back to you next time. So that's the way we're going to run it here tonight. And let's, 8 minutes after, let's take a few more check-ins for emergency preparedness net.
Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray, plane Salem.
Okay, there's Blaine, Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray. Welcome, Blaine. Anybody else? Okay, well, not hearing anyone right now. Let's start talking about stuff here. Let's do some announcements, and then people will check in, I think. Pulling up all my little data dashboards here. So you get some current numbers for Oregon. Anybody have any announcements tonight? Okay, well, I'll do some ones for the repeater. See, I think Dan might actually be up at the repeater and doing that. Some actual customization and repair to the repeater controller device that's up there, and working on batteries that people have helped donate to the cause. So looking pretty good up in the shack there. We're going to get that battery back up in place. Batteries are another thing we talk about a lot on emergency preparedness. This is the time of the year for the batteries, and I should mention that a lot of people are doing you know, Zoom meetings and things like that, and, you know, you should continue to do that. Had one last night where, actually, we had very brief power failure in South Salem. It was just, you know, on and off, but it was enough to reboot the whole system, all computers, well, that weren't laptops and things, but the main thing that rebooted was the Comcast router. And that takes about 5 minutes to come back, so that was a little bit annoying that to have that happen. And it occurred to me that I think maybe someone can confirm this, but if you do put your Comcast router on a backup battery so that a UPS kind of thing, it should actually remain connected. There's still, you know, going over the cable and what have you, should still work. And that's something I haven't confirmed, but Frank had said that that was the case when he was trying to run off the generator, that it was, you know, the rest of the system is still up, so you need to supply power to it. So that's something I want to try. I don't know if anybody had any quick comments on that one. Okay. Anyway, let's move on here. I mean, we always said that it was good to have a landline, and not everybody has a landline anymore. And the reason being that landlines had a voltage supplied through the telephone system, 48, I think it was 80 volts, actually. And, yeah, so if you had a standard, you know, non-powered phone that didn't need a wall wart, it often would make phone calls just fine during power failure. So, yeah, if you do have a landline, that's a, you know, keeping one of those old touch-tone phones that you get at garage sales, you know, in a box somewhere ready to plug in if there's a power failure, might still let you make some communication happen during a power failure. But we're at that time of year where power failures are happening, and we're at that time of year where we're having freezing weather. And usually it's a combination of the freezing weather, you know, the freezing rain stuff getting on the limbs, and then they get heavy and they fall on the power lines, and there you go. And we were out of power for a few days. So if you haven't checked your batteries, this is the time to do it. Make sure you've got your backup battery systems. And, I'm going to have to take the time here to move my power, my UPS power over and try to plug in my Comcast router so that stays connected, because it's kind of, most of my stuff is happening through the computer these days, and all the streaming and things. But anyway, that's that. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf, Delta Bravo. Are there any other announcements? Okay, yeah. Also, you probably noticed there was some confusion there a little bit about the Youthnet. That is at 5:30, and even though it's we've changed the time maybe a couple of times here now, it used to be at 4:30, so Youthnet is at 5:30 on Tuesdays, so if you want to participate in that, that's when you listen in. It used to be at 4:30. And also we had a switch on the lunch bunch, which happens Monday through Friday at noon. Let's see, the Monday person, Whiskey Zero Echo Delta Foxtrot, he moved to Tuesday. And the Tuesday net is actually being run by a young gentleman, Landon. And I think Jennifer also helps out on Monday now. That's a change. We are still looking for net control operators that might want to take a stab at doing some of these nets that we do. There's nets all the time, but we, in particular, Dan is doing both Monday and Friday tech nets. And in doing that, that means he can't go up and fix the repeater, you know, because he's got to stay home and do the net. So if you want to see the repeater batteries and things fixed a little quicker, you know, why don't you offer to help out and do a tech net? It really is actually pretty fun, and boy, you really learn stuff quickly when you're sitting there trying to redirect the discussion. So anyway, that's what I have to say about that. All right, any other announcements, check-ins? We're going to move on. We're going to talk about COVID tonight. Let's we'll do some more check-ins maybe. Go ahead. Okay, well, you probably have noticed that nationwide where the numbers of cases of COVID are really going up. And if you look at if you go to whatever your favorite, you know, website is that shows trends, you probably will see these famous curves. And pretty much, most places around the country, and I'm trying to get a countrywide one here for you, healthdata.org is what I usually use for that. It's one that covers the whole updates thing. So anyway, there's the big maps, of course, and you can drill down to your state, you know, and what have you. Basically, what it's showing is that we actually kind of in an interesting state here. We've really pretty much done what we can do behaviorally before to sort of, you know, flatten the curve, if we were. We're pretty flat. But now if you look at the numbers just, you know, globally, nationwide, you know, we're heading up. We're heading up on the curve. We were kind of doing pretty well, but it is steadily increasing, you know. So, you know, we've got, you know, globally, you know, a lot of deaths. You know, we're over a million. You know, in the United States is going up. But it's not really the sort of the daily deaths that we're sort of worried about at this point in time as much as our hospital resources. Okay, so what we're starting to see now is that upward trend in the hospitals, the numbers of cases, and then hospitalization. Make a drop. So, you know, we were trucking along pretty well. Of course, everybody remembers what happened back in March and April. We had this big, you know, regional thing. There were regional hot spots that just were really bad. Places like Italy and New York and, you know, Washington State, you know, there were just this big rise all of a sudden. And then it people realized that, and they started to do things about it. And the main thing they did about it is they started closing things down and wearing masks and staying home and, you know, all this stuff. So that's that. And then the curve came back down, and we were really great with it. But there's a phenomenon known as pandemic fatigue, which has settled in for most people. And that's kind of like, well, geez, you know, we did so well over the summertime. It was just, you know, gosh, it must not really be all that bad, you know. It shouldn't be that way. But, you know, this most of what I'm going to tell you is pretty common sense. We just need to, part of, you know, understanding an emergency and this, you know, and or a disaster. Remember, our definition of disaster is when we don't have enough resources to deal with the emergency. Emergencies happen all the time. We're pretty good at dealing with emergencies if we have resources. And there are a lot of resources that, you know, money, time, you know, protective equipment, what have you, medicines, treatments. These are all resources. And something, and not a lot has changed over the course of this disease. So the main thing that we did is we behaviorally changed a lot of what we did, and that seems to work. So now something's happened, all right? So now we're starting to see it's no longer, first of all, it's no longer regional little hot spots. It's everywhere. Pretty much can look at any state, you know, and any county. There are very few places. I think there was one place that was Hawaii, where it used to be the old leper colony on Hawaii. It might be one of the only counties that does not have any COVID cases. So it was kind of interesting. So it's everywhere. Okay, so now Oregon. Now this is what I want you guys to kind of realize is that the increase is you could say, well, okay, we've talked about what can cause that. You know, well, you could, if you test more, yeah, you find more cases. So is it the cases? You know, so the first thing that happens is yes, if you test more, you see more cases. But then you look at when you look at the cases, you look at the percentage of positive cases. So that's the first thing that we like to do. We look at the percentage of positive cases. And what we're finding is that in Oregon, you know, the last time I talked to you, which was November 3rd or something like that, I think we were looking at about, somewhere around 6 to 8% positive cases. So this week we're up to 11.2 positive cases. So that number, the end of October, you know, that percentage of cases is gone up, percent positives, okay? That's an important figure to look at. And, yeah, we were at 6%, you know, weekly average of 5.9% on October 22nd. And now here we are a couple of weeks later, and all of a sudden we're at 11%. That's the first thing I wanted to tell you guys. It is important to realize the weekly average for November 10th now is at 12%. So again, more than 1 out of 10 people that you test are going to be positive. Okay. I'm going to go on through different things here, and we'll talk about their different age groups and all that. If you have any questions about that, I'm staring at the data right now. KG7 GDB. Okay, so I think you guys, we've all done a very good job. I think in Oregon in particular, we've done a good job. But we have to kind of just keep an eye on these numbers. We can't sort of let our guard down. So we've talked about last time that people said, well, there's got to be some reason for it, and we haven't really opened up the schools. Not blaming it on the schools. There are a couple of different studies. You can go look at different studies that say pretty much that it's the time spent indoors in small places like restaurants are still really bad. We are seeing reports of, grocery stores, things like that. But the problem is right now that when they go to do contact tracing on people, they really don't know where they got it. They'll tell you that, oh, well, I was trying to be careful. I was wearing my mask, and I'm still sick. So that means that there's more exposure, and it's, remember, this is aerosol. It's in the air. So the more time you spend in closed spaces with other people, the more likely you are to be exposed to it. And we, as of yet, we haven't really shown that there's anything that we can do personally to avoid that, except you're not going to be immune to it. You've never seen this before. You're not going to have an immunity to it. So people get sick. Okay, so the other problem is, again, so you start out with your cases, and then you go to hospitalization, okay? Now, the problem is, again, back on November 2nd, the number of hospitalized was, 180, okay? We had 61 ICU patients, 26 ventilators in use. Well, today, the number of people hospitalized in Oregon is 285, ICU beds, 67, ventilators, 25. So the number of ventilators hasn't gone up. But look at that, 100 more people are in the hospital statewide, which is a lot. That's a huge increase, okay? And so, again, we talked about this before. There's a lag between infection. A certain number of people get infected. Some people don't have any symptoms at all. A certain percentage of people end up in the hospital. And a certain percentage of those people end up getting really sick and going into the ICU, and that is the case, okay? And so you can't really escape that. Obviously, if the more people you have, then the more the hospital fills, and that's the thing we're worried about right now is hospital capacity, okay? So anyway, we can take a look at that. I've got that on here as well, but 146 available ICU beds right now in Oregon. So we got 60 some odd that are filled right now. Okay, so again, that's a couple other takeaways. So that the hospitalizations lag by 2 weeks, usually the infection rates, and so you can blame it on what you like, but what we have to do is we have to modify our behavior again. And, there have been, you can look at stuff, people are asking for more voluntary compliance. Our compliance is pretty good in Oregon as far as the masks use and things like that. We're actually doing like 72% compliance with masks. So not that we're not using our masks, So, again, we don't have the N95 mask, which would be really nice to have for everybody. We are using them, and, I think the projection is right now that, we'd like to have 95% of the people use it, but they're observing 72% mask use. So that's good. The question really is kind of where are you going with your mask? If you're going inside and you're spending time, indoors eating in a restaurant, you can take that mask off and you're going to expose yourself. So not a good idea, okay? but just look at these trends. They're disturbing because they're exponential. And our R value, which is the reproduction rate for Oregon right now, is actually the fourth worst in the country right now. So it actually turns out Maine is the worst right now, 1.43. New Hampshire, Vermont, Oregon, number four, 1.25 is our R value. And that's ahead of other places. So something about our, we've jumped a lot in the last couple of weeks here. So I'll stop here for questions and comments on it, on the statistics for us right now.
KJ7 RMU, do we have any idea how much of that increase in the R value is tied with the climate and sort of just general wet, cold weather we've been having lately?
Yeah, it hasn't been reported as such, but yeah, I think it's, you know, you can think about common sense wise that yes, if we're spending more time indoors, you know, that could be the case. You can look at different outbreaks. When we receive an outbreak, you know, then they start reporting and go, oh yeah, there's an outbreak, and it's what was the one that was just happened? They report on outbreaks when they find something that it shows up. But, I don't know. I think from an individual emergency preparedness person standpoint, you know, the thing is that you can imagine that people are indoors more than they were before, and they have this pandemic fatigue. That's kind of what people are saying, so that they don't really kind of think that, wow, it just hasn't really been that bad, and so not really thinking about it. They're spending more time indoors, and they're they're actually shopping more. That's getting ready for holiday shopping and things. And some of the reports I've read, opinions by people like at the universities, have said, you know, it may be a good idea to skip Thanksgiving as far as going places and seeing your relatives this year. Okay. So I'm going to go through all the sort of the bad news first kind of thing part. I'll get some opinions on that. But, you know, if you've been, you know, you really should forego the travel. This is just, you know, more common sense. It is out there. What we're trying to tell you is out there. It's even in Oregon more than it was. It was 6%. Now it's 11%. You know, so the likelihood of you encountering someone who has this is higher, right? So any comments on that?
Just anecdotally, I know a lot of people personally who have either canceled or drastically scaled down their Thanksgiving plans this year just in response to this.
Okay, yeah, and if you guys are, again, always sort of listen to the science on this stuff, but we still are just getting lots and lots of science reports, and I've been getting the updates from the University of Washington Department of Health. I put a link on that from on our WA7ABU groups.io page. You can go to this University of Washington site. They have something called the COVID-19 Literature Situation Report, and they go through all the pertinent articles, and they, like the one I got today, is based on some review of 840 articles that they reviewed today and found some that they thought were useful ones as far as people knowing that information, and read stuff about that all the time. So there's always new stuff, and there's like one of the things there's a study that said that part of the public health measures that we're using now to reduce COVID, and they actually have a benefit on other viruses. So they actually showed a decline in that R value, the reproductive number, in seasonal influenza A and B, and they said respiratory syncytial virus compared to the past five seasons. So actually, we had less flu this year because of what we were doing. So that was one of the studies that came out. So there's always new information, and I want to talk about some new information that's coming out, but. Despite of the new information, nothing has really changed to the point where we're going to suddenly, you know, have a turnaround. But there have been some good reports, but they're early, and we need to talk about those things. So that, anyway, the okay. First of all, like it was a let me get a drip here. Okay, so now I think the biggest news for today is the announcement yesterday from Eli Lilly. And they have announced that their vaccine that they have produced, they believe, is 91% efficacy, and they released that information as a they basically saying their vaccine works, and Pfizer's vaccine. I'll talk about Eli Lilly in a minute. That's a different one. That's the antibody treatment. Pfizer's vaccine. There's some, you know, very early data on a press release saying, okay, we have what we think are good results, and we think that we're going to be able to get approval on this. So let's talk a little bit about what we know about that, because this is important news. Okay, so here's the deal. And this is, again, reading the news release. It came out. This is a New York Times one, but you can read there's one from Nature. Basically, what they announced is that Pfizer and BioNTech, which Pfizer's American, BioNTech is German company, they apparently staged a late clinical trial on coronavirus with 44,000 participants starting in July. And so what happens with these things is they half the people get the vaccine, and half the people get a placebo, okay? Then what happens is they wait for people to get sick, and they see if they offer any protection. Now, because the trial is not over, they have not actually published all this data. So what they said is that they waited until, so far, 94 people only. 94 people out of the 44,000 have gotten sick since the thing started in July. And so when they look at their internally at their numbers, they believe the vaccine is over 90% effective. And supposedly it is a clinical trial, meaning the data is blind, so they don't know, you know, the volunteers don't know, nobody knows who got the vaccine and who got the placebo, right? But it says that they think it's over 90% effective, and that sounds great, okay? So that's the good news. Okay, so if that's right, you know, what's really nice, I'll talk a little bit more about what it says. This is a vaccine where you get two doses of vaccine. And I'll tell you a little bit about the vaccine. The vaccine is one that uses, let's talk about old vaccines versus new vaccines, okay? This is the new technology for vaccine, and the one made by Moderna works basically the same way. So what this does is they have figured out that the problem is when you're trying to do a vaccine, you need to be able to inject a person with a viral protein that the body recognizes as foreign, so you can make antibodies against it, and then you will fight off the live virus when you encounter it. Right? That's basic vaccine stuff. All right. So normally in the old days, we would have to, you know, grow up a bunch of virus and chick eggs and things, and inactivate it and inject you with it. That's the way, you know, like our flu vaccines and things work. They're a killed or inactivated virus, and you get the whole virus. All right, so we don't have time to do that. It takes like 4 years to do that. So we don't have enough time to grow up a bunch of COVID virus and make protein from it. So they have a new idea. They learned the sequence of this thing right away. They know what the sequence is, and they decided to make something called an mRNA copy of the virus. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about that, and then we can stop and see if anybody has any questions, because it's this is the science part, and it is interesting to me because this is what I used to do, but it may not be interesting to everybody, but you should know kind of basically how it works so you can evaluate what's happening here. Okay, so what we do is they take the virus genetic sequence, which is RNA, and they turn it into a copy called mRNA, and they put that into, they inject it into your body. Your body ends up then seeing this mRNA and going, oh, I know what to do with mRNA. I make protein out of mRNA. That's the way our body, our cells normally make all the proteins in our body are made from genetic sequences. You know, our DNA makes RNA and then it says, hey, make me some whatever your favorite protein is, keratin, like the stuff that makes your nails and hair, okay. Make me some keratin today, and it transcribes off this mRNA, and then the protein-making machinery in your body churns out some keratin, which is then released. All right, so in this case, it's going to churn out the spike protein, you know, from the coronavirus, the little spiky things that you see. So it churns out some spike protein, and that spike protein starts being released into the body, and your immune system says, hey, wait a minute, I don't like this stuff, and starts making antibodies to it. And that's the basic idea of it. And you need two doses of that. There's an injection a couple of weeks apart, sounds like. And that's the basic idea. It needs to be kept really cold, apparently, in the ultra cold freezers. It says a logistic problem of getting it out there. It says that they'd have to get these big freezers out there. You have to get your vaccine, and then you have to come back a couple of weeks later. And that's going to require some logistics to make happen. But that's the basic idea. We don't know yet until they get the final number of people where they close the trial. I'm trying to see what that is. It's like 140 something. They just wait until they get the final number of people, and then they can do the final numbers for us. Are there any questions there at that point?
KK7ART with a question.
Okay, Art. Yeah, this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf, Delta Bravo. Go ahead.
So with that new vaccine, is this going to be like the flu virus where you have to get it every year, or is it going to be two doses and you're done for 5 years or 10 years? And additionally, what we were talking about earlier, you mentioned the hospitalizations and the intensive care unit patients are up, but the people on ventilation is about the same. Is that going to equate to a better mortality rate for people that are hospitalized? I was just wondering kind of on the treatment end what sort of improvements were going on from the clinical people. KK7ART.
Okay, good question, Art. Yeah, so the treatment part of it's separate than the vaccine part, okay? Right? So, you know, the idea is that if we can vaccinate people, that they would either not get the you know, the infection in the first place, or the course of their infection would be not as bad. All right? So it's not that you would not vaccinate people who are already sick with it. It's not going to do any good. Okay? Because they've already been vaccinated, right? If they have the infection, they're doing what they can. So at that point in time, we need other treatments. And I'm going to talk about another one that was announced today, which is Eli Lilly's monoclonal antibody treatment. But let's stay on the vaccine subject for just a minute here. Okay, so we don't know. Again, think about this. How do you know it's going to last for more than a year? It hasn't even been a year since they started the trial. It's been since July, right? So we all hope so. But we don't know, okay? We don't know whether it's going to be, how long the thing's going to take. That's the basic problem that normally we would not even think about, you know, using a vaccine until we had got those questions answered. That's why normally it takes 3 or 4 years to find out that, you know, about vaccines. We don't have time for that right now. So we did this thing called Operation Warp Speed, and this group sort of, you know, in some cases, the government has already paid people like Moderna, you know, hey, we'll go ahead and make this vaccine. We'll pay you right up front right now so you don't have to worry about it, and we'll buy everything that you can produce once it's made. You know, that's Operation Warp Speed. Pfizer claims that they haven't really taken any money to develop it. They developed it all on their own, but as part of Operation Warp Speed, they already have promised that they will be selling doses to the U.S. As part of that agreement. So they are already been paid up front for the vaccine once it's produced. So what we're waiting right now is that we need this trial to end. The first part is they didn't find any bad side effects within the couple of months that happened. And it seems to be effective, you know, at least if we can believe them, that it's blocked these people from getting it. They still have to wait to see, you know, how many people, they get the maximum amount. Then they have to look at some other things. Let me talk about that just a little bit before you. It goes until they get 164 cases. So they don't, expose people purposely. They just let these people go out in the world, and, you know, until they get 164 cases, that's when the trial ends. Okay, so anyway, so it also warns us, it says, you know, when the preliminary evidence comes in, we're really happy and we can get some idea of what the effectiveness is, but the it's an estimate based on statistics, and they call it efficacy. So the effectiveness is different than the efficacy. Efficacy is sort of a guess about how well effective it will be. Effectiveness is after we can be determined after millions of people get it and we see what happens. Like, you know, being effective would be really nice if it would last more than a year. You know, we don't know that. The other problem is that we don't know, because they haven't released the data, what kind of people were enrolled in the study. You know, how many people, it says that they have people over 65, but we don't know how many there were over 65. It says that it was only open to people 18 years or older. It said September they included some teenagers as young as 16. Last month they launched a new trial as children as young as 12. So they really haven't looked at it on the effectiveness on children or people under 18 yet. We're not probably seeing that data. And we're not probably seeing really old people, and we don't know how many, you know, what the profile of pre-existing conditions and all that is. So we won't know that until they release their actual trial data. Okay, KG7GB. So the other good news thing is that this approach that we're talking about is the approach that several other companies are doing, like the Moderna company, doing the same approach. So that is good news. Other vaccine makers can be making, you know, knowing that this, if it is safe and can be reach high efficacy, that we're on the right track, and that will really help a lot if there are more than just Pfizer can make it, because they won't be able to meet the world's demand for the vaccine, but other people will be able to. So hopefully that will, we can get this vaccine out. And they claim that, you know, the next step after the trial is over is to apply for emergency use from the FDA and get emergency approval, and then start giving it to people who are high risk. That would be the people like in healthcare, they said, so might be vaccinated with this at first. KD7, GDB. We'll stop here for questions, comments. Okay, well, we're talking about COVID and there are some things and the vaccine. So it says there are 10 other vaccine trials in late-stage trials right now. And they're just as this is the first real nice one that we've heard about. Okay, so now one thing that they also warn us a little bit about, and this is, you know, opinion of people, scientific, you know, opinion articles and things, is that just because that there's a vaccine that might be, you know, starting to become available this year by the first of the year probably, it is not going to probably get out to the general public for many more months. And, you know, it isn't, you know, you can't sort of go, oh, well, great, now we can go back to normal, you know, and go back to restaurants and all that, because the fact that there's a vaccine out there doesn't mean that you're going to be able to get your hands on it, or, you know, so in other words, we still unfortunately have to keep doing the behaviors we need to do to keep the numbers down and try to keep our hospitals from filling up, because there are places right now where hospitals are filling up, and they're having to transfer people, and that's happening all over. Reports back from Italy today. Italy's back in trouble again. You know, they were the first big, you know, problem with it. Now, southern Italy is a big problem. You know, we have problems, you know, all around with the hospitals filling up, and that's the things we really, you know, don't want to kill our healthcare system with the overburden it, because this is an exponential. It's not, you know, a doubling, but it is a 1.4 right now, and that's still, you know, too high. If we went it below 1, you know, that would be flat again, or going down. So, anyway, now let's talk about Eli Lilly's announcement next. But any final questions about the vaccines right now? Eli Lilly got an authorization today for an antibody treatment for COVID, and that's good. And they say in this article that, the FDA has granted emergency authorization of this antibody. It is called, and it has just a heck of a name. I hope they have a better name for it. Bamlanivimab. It's Bravo Alpha Mike Lima Alpha November India Victor India Mike Alpha Bravo. Okay, I can just tell you this, that anything with MAB at the end, MAB is a monoclonal antibody treatment. And so generally speaking, I'm not sure what this one is raised up against, but generally speaking, you give an antibody treatment to someone and you administer it as soon as possible after a positive coronavirus test within 10 days of developing symptoms. It says the authorization only applies to people who are newly infected with the virus, and it should not be used in hospitalized patients. It's authorized for people age 12 and older, and or people who are at risk for developing a severe form or being hospitalized. So this is similar to the cocktail that Regeneron, that President Trump got, which helped him, I think. It's a single antibody, and they're also working on a double antibody cocktail. But the antibodies generally give your immune system a boost by attacking either the virus or the receptors for the virus that they help the body fight it off. So you can consider it an antiviral type treatment. So it's kind of like getting a little boost of antibodies, you know, that like you would if you were immune to it. So that's a good thing there. But anyway, that's good news. That is a treatment for ART there. And again, but interesting, you asked the question about people, the good question about people in the hospital, will it make them better? No, not necessarily. And because it doesn't seem to, so far these ones, we don't have a treatment that seems to help. Now, that the dexamethasone treatment that we mentioned before, which is a steroid, that does seem to help people who are in the hospital. Remdesivir, let's see, that's the other one we announced. That's an antiviral. I'm trying to remember whether that one was good for hospitalization or not. We don't need to know which one works or not. I mean, this is a decision that your doctors make, and they will try everything that they can try to make it work, you know, for you. But it is good news for us that we have another tool that's been approved that will help with the treatments. Okay, so that was two good news items there today for us in the news. But not to relax your vigilance and your guard, because it, yes, 771 new cases in Oregon today, 285 hospitalizations. The number of deaths total is 734. Not too many today, five. There you go. Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Questions, comments? Come now. Okay, let's see. They're all, you know, the science parts of these are very interesting. That there was another study came out and said that the virus was stable on human skin up to 14 days at 4 degrees Celsius. That's pretty cool, compared to 96 hours at 22 degrees. So cold weather on the skin, the virus lasts longer on the skin. It's also greater stability on paper currency and clothing at colder temperatures. So there's another warning there for you know, the cold weather. That might also be something to consider. That's, again, stability of the virus on cold stuff. We know from before that the cold temperatures, it does not kill the virus. Usually just stabilizes it. And let's see. Virus, here's an issue. They tested a USA banknote, and they said stayed stable on a $1 bill for 96 hours at 4 degrees. And see, the viruses were only stable for 8 hours and 4 hours at 22 degrees, that's room temperature, and 37 degrees, 4 hours. So the warmer temperatures helped get rid of the virus on that. So it's still on surfaces as well. Anyway, so if you're interested in these, you know, the little science studies, which will, you know, that gives us sort of our bulk of knowledge, and those come out slowly. Again, that the University of Washington has a great website, and I put a link to that before, where you can get these reports. Let's see, I still think that, you know, you guys are doing a good job, you know, observing everything. We're doing a pretty good job in Oregon maintaining our safety, but just don't take the good news reports of vaccines and treatments as a sudden, you know, relaxation of your you know, the strategies you're using. Your strategies are working. You know, this isn't the time to go, well, everybody's in the restaurant, you know, and look at the, and, you know, I might as well go in. Look, everybody's in there and they're eating. No, that's exactly the time you want to not go in there. And, you know, with the cold weather and people indoors, you know, less ventilation in the rooms, warmer, and just more risk of exposure. So just situational awareness is always a basic idea of how to deal with emergencies. That's the first thing. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, and we're going to pause here. Probably said as much as I can say about COVID. I could look up other numbers if anybody has any questions about that. But if there's any other check-ins, comments, other topics you'd like to discuss tonight, go ahead.
KK7ART with one more question for you.
Okay, Art, good. I like the questions. Go ahead.
So what's your take of the situation going on, I believe, in Belgium, where they're culling all these mink farms, and they said there's been some transmission of a mutated virus from minks to humans? I mean, just because it's mutated doesn't really necessarily mean much one way or the other, but I was just wondering what your take on that situation was. KK7ART.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I haven't studied the, I've seen the news reports, but I can't comment specifically why the mink are so bad, that this is something that is, has been reported that they're destroying all these mink and that they really seem to get the virus. And so, yeah, I guess one take is that, yes, you know, you can, you know, that this virus affects more than just people. And I suppose if it has an animal host, that's something. You know, we originally think that there might have been an animal host, like a you know, a bat, maybe transmitting it to a pangolin, which then transmits to us. So we really don't want to have an animal host for this. That is common and out there. You know, I don't think you're going to encounter any pangolins in the United States. You know, but it does look like I wouldn't really want to be around mink because they seem like they get it and they transmit it to each other. I did see actually in my little report here about animals that we do have, and it was kind of interesting, about dogs and cats. This was a kind of interesting one that was in here. Let me tell you this. So in households, this is a little study. It said in households that had COVID positive case, now this is a lot, it's like 10 out of 47 cats and dogs were positive for antibodies against SARS-CoV-2, right, compared to 1 out of 38, so that was 21% versus 3% in households without a person known SARS-CoV-2. Now, it says that suggests, they think, that there is a human-to-pet transmission is more likely than pet-to-pet. Or pet to human. So anyway, it is possible that your dog or cat can actually, if you're positive, would get your COVID. But it doesn't seem to really bother them very much. But that, no, there's a comparison. Those are small numbers, you know. Not enough to really sort of go, wow, make a huge conclusion. But, yeah, they're going back to the original idea. Yes, animals get this stuff. And some, like the mink, actually do die from it. And they really are worried about the mink, and they're culling them. Okay, so anyway, the answer to your question there, I can look it up further if you want, but it is really interesting about the mink. There also was something on yesterday about ferrets, and ferrets had actually had a drug that was being tested on them, and I'm sorry I didn't read the news about the ferrets, but apparently they tested some nasal spray on ferrets, and it was protective. So I think we're, you know, these are all things that get reported. That one I didn't read because I don't think it was in my Washington study. I like using the Washington study because they don't look at news reports. They only look at ones that have been published or, you know, available for preprint. So that's one good reason. If you look at, you know, just news reports, it can be a little confusing sometimes, and they don't always cite the correct sources. Let's see, the other thing I saw today was actually CDC apparently has, you know, up to their recommendations for masks, saying we definitely need to wear masks, that they think that masks are protective for people as well. So, again, I guess the point is 72% of the people in Oregon are doing it, so it would be great if more people would do it. But last week someone mentioned that they, you know, maybe it was Dean, said he went into a situation where, like, it was a bunch of family members, and he was the only one wearing a mask. And, you know, if that makes you uncomfortable to stand your ground like that, then, you know, I mean, you have to make that decision. But the point is that if you don't wear the mask, you're at risk, right? Even if it's your loved ones, and Thanksgiving's coming around the corner, and I know the kids haven't seen grandma and all that, but, you know, maybe this winter is not the time to do it. In springtime, we're making some progress here. You know, warmer weather, you can have an outdoor picnic, you know, that kind of thing. Really much, much safer. We did really well in the warm weather. So I'd say let's postpone it and, you know, do something else. But, you know, don't give in to peer pressure and take your mask off indoors. Really don't. KG7, GDB. Okay, well, we're just about out of time. Were there any final check-ins or comments for emergency preparedness now? Okay. Well, and one other thing I wanted to tell you guys is that I did read one of these studies, and it said that if you are trying to find these N95 masks, they're, you know, the true NIOSH N95 mask, and Blaine can tell you all the different ratings of these things, you know, is really the desired mask, and we're trying to get those into the hands of healthcare people, okay? That's why they've always said, well, yeah, just let them have it. But, you know, if you're trying to buy an N95 mask, you will see an option for something called a KN95 mask, okay? And I read one study that said that those KN95s, some of them are okay and some of them are not. And so this is like one of those things, you know, when you buy something on Amazon and some are counterfeit and some don't work right. And it said, unfortunately, there was nothing that would prove that they were, you know, the effective kind versus the you know, whereas all the NIOSH N95s that you buy, they tested all met spec, okay? But the KN95s, some met spec and some didn't, and they had a couple of different designations, and so it's a kind of a buyer beware thing, you know, on it. And the other thing about KN95s is they don't have the same loop system and fit that the N95s do. They fit, instead of having a rubber band that goes around the back of your neck and around the back of your head, they have ear loops. And you might find that those, don't fit as well. And I know that my daughter's doing some clinical things in her job, and they gave her KN95s, and they didn't fit very well. So she's actually wearing two masks, the KN95 is the inner layer, and another mask, like a surgical mask, over it to try to help with that. So just buyer beware on the KN95s as a mask. Make sure your mask fits, and there's guides on how to fit them. But professionals really need to actually have the mask fit tested, which they do with a special saline spray and things, and they figure out how well it fits. But there you go. That's all I have to tell you tonight. Any final words, comments, check-ins before we close the net? Okay. Well, very good. Well, the time is now 8:02 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. I'm hoping that Richard will make a recording. He has been making recordings, and they've been available on the WA7ABUgroups.io page. You can go back to previous recordings where we tell you that, when the weather gets colder and people go indoors, that the numbers will go up, and they definitely have. So anyway, I think that our predictions have come true, pretty much what we've said, and questions on this net and everything have been really good. I'm really proud of people for being careful and trying to stay informed. We've had really good discussions, and I've learned a lot trying to bring this information to you. So I appreciate your participation and good comments. Okay, so anyway, this net meets on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz, and our thanks go out to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to all who participated today and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, now closing the net at 8:03. We now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day to everyone. Thank you for your service. And KG7GDB, I'll be clear.